Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for September 1st, 2008, the Labor Day episode, and on this episode we are honored to have an interview with Steppenwolf Theater's artistic director, Martha Levy. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago! And let's talk theater.
Hello, I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, and this is Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Today I'm talking to Martha Levy, the artistic director at Steppenwolf Theater, a position she's held for the last 13 years. And we'll be talking about Steppenwolf, where it is now, and where it's going. So welcome, Martha.
Thank you, Ian.
I thought we would start with the recent huge successes that the company has enjoyed with August Osage County, including the Tony Award in New York. And I could imagine that that kind of worldly success is both very heady and possibly has some attendant problems, brings with it problems. So if you could just talk about, you know, what that has changed for you and what you're facing as a result of it.
Well, first of all, I want to assert how much I celebrated, how glad I am for Tracy as a playwright to be acknowledged in that way, and for the production directed, of course, by Anna Shapiro and our people by our ensemble. It's a great, great thrill for all of us that we're being represented with that material on that stage.
And a thrill for, I think, Chicago audiences,
well,
too.
Well, we hope so, because It feels like a kind of collective success. I mean, Chicago feels so deeply in the DNA of what Steppenwolf is that it's always been an honor for us to be a kind of hometown theater. I think we still always feel that. I think we also felt it just sort of at a national level. A lot of our peers in the not-for-profit theater across the country have said, this feels like collectively our success. This is the work that we do in our theaters. This is how we, in some ways, distinguish our work from, you know, the commercial world. We cultivate these artists. Not all of them are well-known. So that it feels great at that level. The challenges that the success of August Osage County have produced have to do with the way that it sort of plucked a big contingent of our artists out of our season, both the one that, you know, in the immediate aftermath, and then even sort of ongoingly as we look forward to a production at the National Theater, and of course some of our ensemble members, let's say chief among whom Amy Morton, and I say chief among whom because she is both an actor and a director, and we lose that double resource when she is so committed to the play. So that's been a challenge to negotiate that. You know, you could talk to Tracy directly. He and I have discussed what it means for a writer to be met with that level of success.
Right.
It can be very inhibiting, and this is why he and I were both very grateful that we had already elected to program his next play before August met this level of acclaim, because he was just task-driven at that point. And I think that that's very wholesome for a writer to experience that. And because Superior Donuts was so different a kind of play from August, the horizon of its ambition was different, the whole discourse of the play was different, that, you know, I said, Tracy, you're now free to write whatever you want to next.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
right.
it wasn't additive to expectation.
Right, right.
So I think he feels good about that. And what I feel really good about is that this is his home. And as a writer, I think that that's probably very helpful to know that there is a place that will produce one's plays, whatever.
Yeah. Molière liked it. Mm-hmm. Chekhov liked it.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem
it's
like
it's not a bad system.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, I guess I was wondering whether one of the things that I think even you have said in the past that characterizes Chicago theater is that we're not looking over our shoulders for someone to notice what we're doing. It's just a very matter-of-fact kind of world where people are just doing the work. And I could imagine that having this kind of success in the New York stage, in the New York world, which is of course, glamorous and heady could create some kind of desire to repeat that, could get people looking again towards New York for acclaim in a way that seems antithetical to me.
Well, I don't know. You know, I will say for my own company, one of the great blessings of August relative to the theater has been it happened at a moment where our company has a kind of maturity. A lot of these people, let's say the early go-round of that of sort of outer world acclaim that Steppenwolf experienced, those in many cases were actors and directors who were at the launch of their career.
Right.
So they for them, the logical and appropriate step was, all right, I'm going to go out there and get this. And many of them did. This time around, you know, that Tracy's impulse, Fran's impulse, Anna's impulse, these are people who have a kind of maturity in their life. They're living the life that they have chosen and want. So they return to Chicago to Steppenwolf to do their work.
Right.
And so it has this, I don't know, it's a really, it's very moving to me to witness that. And I think it's suggestive not just of something about those individuals, but it charts a kind of evolution in the life of Steppenwolf Theater that I just find very moving.
Well, you're talking about the life cycle, let's say, of the institution of Steppenwolf, which I'm very interested in. You know, what I think probably an institution has a finite life cycle as a human being does, and I'm interested, where do you think Steppenwolf is along its path?
You know, I guess that an institution does have a finite lifespan. Although I'm not sure that that's absolutely so. I think it has a life cycle, but I think that institutions can regenerate themselves.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
My perception that has happened here.
And that, yes, that's kind of you to say because I feel that that's what has happened. And sometimes I characterize it this way, that because the model of conversation is very meaningful to us at Steppenwolf and the notion of the public square. And I think that in the early years of Steppenwolf, the conversation was among and between artists. Mm-hmm. They were doing their work for each other. That's how they were getting better. Fair dues. In the second stage of the life, there was a sort of lifting up of the head and saying, oh, gosh, yes, I see, we're responsive to a public.
Mm-hmm.
But it was from the position, if you will, that we were an arts institution and we were sort of giving unto our audiences our work. And I feel that the transition that's happened, consciousness that's within us now is, I see, we're in conversation with our audiences. In other words, that we're looking to be informed as much as they by the exchange. And that's, it's a little maybe, is this too obvious to say that that's a function of maturity, that too follows a kind of trajectory that I think all of us experience in our own lives. You know, there's a point at which, after having known absolutely everything, one realizes, oh gosh, there's how little one knows. And I think that Steppenwolf is, I think we're feeling, there's a confidence that comes with our history, but I know for myself, I'm dazzled really by the amount that I continue to learn from this place and from our audiences and from this city. It's humbling, and it's really pride making. I think I speak collectively for us to be now, I think, regarded as part of the signature of Chicago.
Right. Well, how you talked about a learning process. How for you personally how have you changed as a leader over the time that you've been the artistic director?
You know, and it may not be terribly dissimilar from what I just described for the institution, which is to say, you know, I didn't, you know, leader, and if one hasn't had that experience, I mean, I came into this having been an actor and thusly a waiter and a receptionist. And,
right.
You know, and I taught as a graduate student. But leading a staff and so forth, So I guess I thought that I was supposed to know more than I did. Do you know what I mean? Or that a leader meant that, you know, I don't know. Well, I guess what I've learned is the amount of energy and resources that are all around me in all these really intelligent, caring, and dedicated people, staff, trustees, and of course the ensemble. And just, I guess I feel that I'm able to listen a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And our audiences too, they're, you know, just in the way that I was describing, it doesn't feel like there's a gulf or that, you know, somehow the artists need to remain in protection of what we do against the audience, as though there's some sort of artist slash Philistine, you know,
right.
dynamic happening,
right.
which I think
right.
when one is a young artist, it sometimes feels that way because one is still pulling oneself out into a kind of singular identity, just mm-hmm. like an arts institution. Gary Sinise used to say to me, he used to kind of laugh because, you know, in their early days, the Steppenwolf Ensemble members were sort of famous for, like, thinking everybody else's work was, you know, that it wasn't that good, and thinking everything that they did was great.
Uh-huh.
And Gary laughed about that, you know, some years ago to me. He said, well, Martha, you know, we didn't have anything else. None of us had a dime. You know, we had nobody paying any attention to us. So that's
what you pay yourself with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, but I want to explore that a little more because there is some tension between audience expectation and artistic integrity. Is that going
sure.
too far? I mean, how do you mediate between learning from your audience but also knowing when you know better, so to speak?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't mean at all to efface the role that I think that arts institutions have in, and let's say a theater has in sort of starting the conversation. I keep using that model, but I really do think, therefore, what one does is speak to the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very solacing and sometimes surprising to learn from our audiences that this is their opportunity to engage ideas and feelings that the rest of their life doesn't really provide an arena for. And so that's a big responsibility. Now, I don't mean by, you know, that talk to suggest that there aren't pulls sometimes towards material that, I guess the word right would be safer.
Right.
Safe.
Mm-hmm. Easier.
And I think, I think Steppenwolf was really lucky. Because my predecessors forged an identity for this theater that had to do with being a bit aggressive. Now, we've failed that. We've exceeded that. You know, it's not always clear
mm-hmm.
exactly where that comes down. We've done material, and I certainly say this material has been programmed under me, that I have felt much milder than I would have wished, because I don't think it lives up to the promise of what the charter we actually own mm-hmm. programmatically. But and sometimes that's been in response to the wish of ensemble members to work on a particular thing. And so that's a negotiated balance too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you have a lot of constituencies.
Yeah.
Well, how has your identity or personality as a company changed then? I mean, everybody has a sense of what the original Steppenwolf mm-hmm. was, and it was mm-hmm. John Malkovich with his back to the audience and people running onto the stage full tilt and a kind of really visceral kind of acting and material. And that certainly doesn't characterize everything you do anymore. Is there something that does characterize everything you do now?
You know, I'd be hard-pressed to identify it mm-hmm. if it was. I mean, what I hope it is, I hope everything is balanced by the quality of the acting.
Right.
I hope that there's a kind of an immediacy, truthfulness, and an ensemble playing, and that's really the anchoring identity of the theater. Because it's interesting, isn't it, Anne, how varied a program of plays are possible if there's a kind of commitment to emotional truth. One still feels like, gee, I'm having a humanly revealing experience here.
I mean, even if the material may not be as excellent, is that what you were saying?
Or if it doesn't have a kind of obvious gritty naturalism.
Oh, right. Sure. Well, and it's true that I think even less than excellent material, when it's acted so superbly, is exciting to see because you're seeing the acting, and that really is something. Well, let's talk about other constituencies that I perceive you as feeling some loyalty to, because other than your audiences and your ensemble members, for instance, you're widely praised for turning up at plays, you know, on the storefront scene, kind of everywhere you're there seeing stuff, which gives me the impression that you feel some kind of connection beyond your own company and beyond your own audiences. What is the role that you see for yourself and for Steppenwolf vis-a-vis other companies in Chicago?
Well, first of all, I have such high regard for the quality of work that's in our city. And often enough, I just feel like it's not even half to know. I really want to know who my colleagues are.
Mm-hmm.
And, our casting director, Erica Daniels, is, just superstar casting director. And she really makes it a point to know actors in town. And I like to see that, too, designers and directors. It just, I'm just interested, But I'm kind of a geek in that way. I mean, when my idea of a vacation includes going to the theater, I honestly really love it. And I guess I have to say, too, that, and the audiences as well, when I'm in a theater, and often I'll go by myself, I never feel alone. I never feel alien. I always feel comfortable in a theater.
Well, that makes me think about something else I've wondered, which is a person, an artistic director of an important company, is someone from whom a lot of people want something. And I wonder if that is something you experience. How does that feel?
Well, I'm in the really fortunate position of being able to provide opportunities for people that can be are ones that they want or can be very helpful to them.
Right.
And I always want to be responsible to that. But you're right, sometimes it's not that I'm distrustful of people's motives. I mean, I'm very aware that I'm, and it's nothing to do with me, it's just what I represent.
Your position, right.
Right. And I'm mindful of that, and that's probably why I especially cherish the people in my life who for whom that's irrelevant.
Right, of course.
But but I don't mean to say it's not burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my gosh, what's burdensome is the situation often of the very people who are seeking something, which is to say not to have a platform for one's voice and one's talent. That's the hard job.
Yeah.
And it's not because any one of those people is not talented or not deserving. It's just that, the world of theater, and that's what I find so painful, and I deeply remember this from my own life at a certain point, thinking, I will not get to say my say in the world. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to get heard. And that is really an aching feeling.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of Steppenwolf that I personally really admire is the sponsorship of other companies at the Garage and giving more junior companies, let's say, the platform that you can give them through that, which seems to me a wonderful service to Chicago Theater. How do you choose the companies that find a place there in the Garage series?
Well, for one thing, it's kind of they have to have a certain institutional capacity to do it, which is to say that there's running costs, for instance, of our spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nominal, in a certain way. But, you know, not every, first of all, not every small company can sustain, let's say, a 6 performance week. And,
right.
you know, they can be up to 8 in our spaces. So that is a winnowing process. And then just, many companies we regard as successful are living much more hand to mouth. So the idea of kind of being able to meet that weekly running nut before. So that's right there is a discerning. Now we're revisiting that the producing model for our visiting companies, because in fact I would like to make that more approachable, more hospitable for a larger group of people.
Mm-hmm. So lower the bar and economically.
Yeah, yeah, and what it might mean is devising a new producing model, let's say potentially companies who kind of reduce the production footprint itself and think about doing some things in rep so that, mm-hmm. There's some places in New York that are using that. And I'm kind of thinking of that as a template.
Something like what you do with First Look, where you can have three shows.
Yeah, and then you do less shows a week. Mm-hmm. You perhaps do a longer run, so you build word of mouth, which is how many smaller companies do their work. So we're looking at all that.
Well, what other ideas do you have up your sleeve? What other plans do you have for the company?
Well, I think that probably just ones that we have continually. Like I say, and we're looking at that. We're looking at in cooperation with Anna Shapiro, who runs the directing program at Northwestern, ways to bring those young emerging artists their voice more into, give them more of a platform. Chicago is home to the second largest student population, college population in the country after Boston, and we know that the mayor is very committed to making this a place that's hospitable for students and graduates and. That feels like a giant resource, and that because we have an interest sort of from the very Steppenwolf for Young Adults programming that reaches high school students, we have the school at Steppenwolf, we have, just to make that more continuous and fluid to reach all of those groups of people. So I think there's an emphasis on looking to who those young artists and young audiences are. Increasingly, and that has to do with the development, as I say, of artists and audiences. But then there's also the work itself. Our Ed Sobel leading our new plays initiative, and that manifests itself both his First Look and commissions and the ongoing development of our own work. So the hope is that we keep at every front looking to. Okay, who's emerging? Who's mm-hmm. who's new on the block?
Keeping the door open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and that leads into another question I had, which is how do you keep an institution regenerating itself? What can you do as a leader to help that happen?
Well, I think one invites in some chaos,
right.
mean, this is, I think innovation is fueled. This is where artists are so helpful. And this is something that maybe a confidence that I've developed as I have sat in the chair for a longer period of time, that the artist should have a much larger voice in the way that, the institution, the decision-making that would seem to be in another place, the province of the executive and artistic director. I think about this all related to August Osage County.
Mm.
Tracy, Anna, and the company were intimately involved in the decision-making about how it would move away from Steppenwolf, the producers, the venue. And not all of those were obvious decisions.
Right.
But they were going on gut. They were up close to it. And David Hawkinson and I respected that.
Mm-hmm. So a very democratic process as producers, mm-hmm. which does strike me as very unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's just end by my asking you, is there any one thing that you hope you accomplish before you're done here?
One thing.
Or two or three.
You mean, it's, excuse me for not... for not being able to come up with a brilliant answer to that. I've never been a person in who sort of like, what's your 5-year plan?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't. I operate perhaps in looking for my direction closer to the ground. It's always been sort of a follow my nose thing. And I feel that I'm surrounded by such dedicated and really resourceful people that there's a way in which, you know, kind of me defining the accomplishment of StepMole is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is an ensemble-driven place. And by that, I don't just mean artistic ensemble. That's the, you know, that is in the DNA of this place, that there's a collective energy that is really always superior to one person's
mm-hmm.
idea.
Mm-hmm. So somehow this organic process of everybody involved driving the ship together.
Yeah.
And who knows where it will go.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great where it's gone so far. So I want to thank you, Martha,
yeah.
so much.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of September 1st, 2008. The Jeff Committee announced the 150 nominations for the 40th Annual Equity Jeff Awards for 88 Jeff-recommended equity productions, which opened between August 1st last year and July 31st of this year. Beginning this season, the Jeff Committee is acknowledging the work of large and mid-sized theaters in separate categories for productions and technical elements. Marriott, Looking Glass, and Goodman led the large theater tier, with Marriott's Les Miserables garnering 9 nominations. Shattered Globe and Chicago Dramatist led the mid-sized theater tier, with Shattered Globe's Requiem for a Heavyweight bringing in 7. The 40th Annual Jeff Awards Ceremony will be held on Monday, October 20th at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, Illinois. The evening is black tie optional, and the public is invited to attend. To purchase tickets, visit the Jeff Awards website at jeffawards.org. And for a complete list of the Jeff Equity nominations, click on over to our news section. American Theatre Company kicks off its 24th season with the Chicago premiere of The People's Temple. The show is about the Jim Jones' 1978 People Temple movement and their struggle to build a utopian community in the remote jungles of South America. ATC's newest artistic director, PJ Paparelli, is bringing together one of the largest ensemble projects in ATC history, which should hopefully debunk the myth of Jonestown and tell the truth straight from the people who lived it. So don't miss your opportunity to see the People's Temple at the American Theatre Company opening on September 4th. Tickets are currently available online at atcweb.org. Click on over to Theater in Chicago's news section for Joe Stead's latest article about the American Players Theater in Wisconsin. It's one of the finest classical repertory theater companies in the country, and they perform at the former summer home of architect Frank Lloyd Wright. Producing artistic director David Frank spoke with Theater in Chicago about the company's 29th season performing under the stars and the challenges of producing great classical theater. Check out the article on Theater in Chicago's news feed. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Martha Levy for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.